This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 5th, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. It's worth remembering that opportunities for local, state, and federal asset forfeiture are everywhere. Those seizures tend to target those already in a poor position to challenge police authority. Walter Olson, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, provides a rundown of some recent galling examples.
Forfeiture, of course, has been going on for a long time, and Cato has been following it for a long time. There seems to be a cluster of reports. Tennessee is a hot spot for police stop forfeiture, where out-of-town motorists, out-of-state motorists will be coming through. Police will stop them, ask if they can search the car, and confiscate large amounts of money that happen to be found on the driver. Now, this seems to happen even when the person had a good explanation about, I had a lot of money because I was going to go out and buy a car off Craigslist, that sort of thing. And it's been exposed very well by TV reporters down there. Well, the latest wrinkle is someone was in the room reporting when a police chief from a town in Tennessee told his town that they needed to get him a police dog because they were missing out on revenues that the dog could provide by alerting to money and that sort of thing. And this just opens a little window. There's a group called Americans for Forfeiture Reform, which keeps tabs on some of this, and they have gone to the websites where police dogs are for sale to departments, and there are little testimonials, which are kind of like lottery winners, saying, you know, see this adorable pooch, you know, she got $18,000 in one seizure alone. You know, they're adorable, and they make your department rich. I mean, what more could you ask for? So it's often rather sinister. And another of the stories comes from Northern California, where Butte County, north of Sacramento, has a high rate of seizure and forfeiture connected with marijuana growing, not too surprising in itself. But the county also has a very unusually high rate of seizure of children for social services and child protective services. And that seems to be related. It seems that a lot of those kids are getting seized because their parents or caregivers happen to be growing marijuana on their property. And in that county, there are a lot of parents organizing and comparing notes and fighting back, because this turns something that is enough of a tragedy in the criminal justice system into a potential permanent family tragedy. There's another case from Ohio, which kind of throws a spotlight on some of the bad incentives that it gives a legal system that is supposed to be objective, where the objectivity of the actors in the legal system is supposed to be so important. Now, we know that the police department's incentives can be warped a bit by the idea of having new vehicles to drive around. But in this case, it sounded like such a touchy-feely, a warm story, which is that gardening equipment seized from a marijuana grower was being used for a new urban gardening program that was going to help out the poor, and it was just adorable sounding. But it happened, so pointed out the reader who flagged this for me at Overlawyered, my website, that the same judge who had signed the search warrant was getting good publicity for having approved the reuse of the seized gardening equipment for the program. Now, what kind of incentive does that give judges anyway? It gives them an incentive, I think, to sign that search warrant, even if perhaps there's a bit of doubt in their mind. And people ask, is anything being done about this? Isn't there some move to reform this in Washington? And I'm afraid the bad news is, not only no, is there no strong movement outside of a few places like the Cato Institute, but it gets worse. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, not a very popular federal agency, has just been given massive new forfeiture powers. And one can predict, as the night follows the day, that there will be stories within a few years of abusive forfeitures in the areas of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Now, just to be clear, when local agencies want to engage in forfeitures where state laws might preclude them from keeping a lot of those revenues, the federal government is already, in many instances, brought in to actually execute the forfeiture. And then the local police agency, rather than having to turn that money over to the general fund, gets to keep a large share of
that. Yeah, there are sharing arrangements. There is strategic behavior in which they use whichever level of law enforcement gives them the best forfeiture deal. We know that people go shopping for tax rates and between states and go shopping for favorable corporate law, and unfortunately, the authorities also go shopping for laws that give them more rights against the populace.
To your point about Tennessee, one thing I believe I remember correctly about the issue in Tennessee is that the police were stopping almost exclusively southbound vehicles to the extent that they're trying to get cash rather than drugs.
It's interesting, yeah, because according to the literature, the money flows tend to be in the opposite direction from the drug flows, and they're much more interested in stopping traffic where they can get money, which is really immediately useful, than drugs, which they might have to destroy or something. There was a case so outrageous. I don't think we covered it. I don't know whether you've done other shows on this, but a few months ago, there was really extraordinarily outrageous reporting. Radley Balko reported for the Huffington Post about an episode in Wisconsin where a local police department was making a habit of telling families of newly arrested people, you need to bring in cash for their bail. And then when the family would bring in the cash, they would seize it immediately, saying, oh, well, our dog smells some drugs on that cash, so it must have been the proceeds. We own that cash now. Now go out and find bail some other way. And they got caught, if I may put it that way, because a lawyer realized what was going on, and the family recorded that it had just gotten the cash from a bank ATM, and of course the town then seized it. But they had a record, you know, half an hour ago, or however long it was, this was in a bank's ATM.
Walter Olson is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.